Have you ever wanted something so badly you physically ached for it? Perhaps it was that new job that you had interviewed for and you were one of several that was being considered for it and you thought, this is it, this is the job I want, this is in the career path that I want, and I want it so badly, and you almost hurt. How about that house that you've been longing for? A piece of lawn that you could call your own, a piece of dirt that you could call your own, a place that was just yours, where you knew where you were paying something every month that was going not just to the landlord, but you were building a little bit of equity for yourself and or your family. How about that first time when you got that new car, or you wanted that new car, and you just, wow, you would just love to be able to have that new car smell for some period of time. Maybe it was planning an exotic vacation. You know, you've taken some vacations before, but it had always been something rather bland, plain. And so here you were, you just longed for that exotic location of a vacation somewhere around the world. Perhaps it was wanting a mate. You're single. You desperately, desperately desire to be married, and you just wanted so badly for that to happen. Maybe it was being married and wanting children, or wanting grandchildren, or wanting great-grandchildren. In every one of those cases, we come back and understand and realize that our attitude as we long for those things says a lot about our relationship with God. Did we pray for those things? And how fervently did we pray for those things? How frequently did we pray for those things? Once we maybe acquired something like that, that we had longed for, we just literally ached for, did we go back to God and thank God? Or once we had it, did we just sort of go along our merry way? You know, I knew a couple once, again, know them very, very well, and they desperately wanted to have a child, and they had tried for years, and it literally was 10 years before they were able to have a child, but they were able to have that child. And there was great joy. You know, there is a woman that we are introduced to in the Bible that was also in such a situation in that she was childless. She was desperately wanting a child and was not able to have a child. Now imagine her joy when she had that child, but then also imagine that she would willingly give that child up. Now think about that for a moment, that you want something so badly that you cry out to God for it, and then when you finally get that which you want, that child that you have longed for, you simply say, I'm willing to give that child up. That individual's life story is a wonderful example, and it has tremendous life lessons for all of us today. And I believe that those lessons that we learn are regardless of our age, our sex, or our marital status. This afternoon, I'd like to talk about that particular person and the lessons that we can learn from the life of that particular person. The title for the sermon this afternoon is Lessons from the Life of Hannah. Lessons from the Life of Hannah. Let's turn over to 1 Samuel chapter 1. We find the story of Hannah told in essentially two chapters in 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel chapter 1 and 1 Samuel chapter 2. Hers is a story that in many respects, when you read it at the very beginning, it is a story of deep, deep anguish. And yet, you also recognize and realize that the relationship that she had with God was such that she still, through all of this and all that she went through, as we're going to go through here briefly, we're going to see that she still had this deep, abiding faith in God. She still had a deep and a tremendous respect for God, in spite of the situation of being childless. As I said, as we look at this particular story, it's more than just about the physical of a woman wanting a child. There are lessons from her life that are paramount to each and every one of us, as I said, regardless if we are male, female, single, or married. 1 Samuel chapter 1, 1 Samuel chapter 1, And we notice here beginning in verse 2, 1 Samuel chapter 1, beginning in verse 2. It says, and he had, this is speaking of the man Elkaniah, who would be the husband to Hannah. He had two wives here in verse 2. The name of one was Hannah, and the name of the other was Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. Now, again, she is married to this man who has two wives. We read the story, we understand that he had children with that one wife, Peninnah, but with Hannah, he did not have any children. And we are told that it was because, again, Hannah could not have children because God had closed her womb. Now, there's an aside note that we understand there, that we remember that children are a gift from God. And that sometimes we understand and realize that women have not been able to have children, but at some particular point, I've known individuals that have been anointed. They've been anointed multiple times, and ultimately they have been able to have children. They are, we understand, a gift from God. That is, again, scriptural. We understand that ultimately children ultimately belong to God. We are their stewards. We are the ones to bring them up, so to speak. Let's pick it up here in verse 3. This man went up, speaking of Elkanah, went up from his city yearly to worship and sacrifice to the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. Also the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, the priests of the Lord, were there. So we have Eli and his two sons. And whenever the time came for Elkanah to make an offering, he would give portions to Peninnah, his wife, and to all her sons and daughters. So when he would go up, again, this point where he would go up to the city yearly to worship, and when he would do that, he would present those offerings or that sacrifice, and he would give offerings again for himself, and he would give portions to the one wife and to all of her children or their children. So again, the whole family would come to this particular point where they were offering up these sacrifices. Verse 5, but to Hannah he would give a double portion, for he loved Hannah, although the Lord had closed her womb. So again, we find it again. We're told here that the womb was closed. We find that there was a love of Hannah by her husband. Now, this whole point of her womb being closed and the fact that she was without children was weighing on her, obviously, from the standpoint that she wanted children, probably from the standpoint of being able to want to give children to her husband. But there's also the other side of it as well, is that during this particular time, it was part of the culture of the day that if you did not have any children, if you did not have any children, you were considered a failure. And so you would get a sense that when she would go up to Shiloh with the family, you know, the extended family, you got the other wife and all the kids, and you've got my husband, and here I am tagging along and I have no children. So you get a sense that they might be speaking in the marketplace and going, oh yeah, she's the one that doesn't have any children. Humanly speaking, you might say that she felt a little embarrassed, or maybe she felt like a failure because she was not able to give her husband something that surely the other wife was able to give him. Notice verse 6. And her rival, that being Peninnah, also provoked her severely to make her miserable because the Lord had closed her womb. So it was year by year when she went up to the house of the Lord that she provoked her. Therefore, she wept and did not eat. Now, again, it's a situation that's bad. We all understand that. We recognize that if you're in that particular situation, it's not pleasant. But here's somebody in your own household that is making it worse. They're provoking you. They're irritating you. They're jeering at you. You're the substandard one. You're the one that's not able to get pregnant and have kids. Look at me. Look at the kids I've had. So year after year after year, this would go on. And you get a sense that it would just wear on Hannah. It would just wear on her to the point you just get frustrated and you're just simply, I'm surely going before God and crying out and just saying, why is this going on? So she's having to deal with all of these things, not only from outside the household, when she goes up and everybody sees that she doesn't have children, so she's looked at some sort of a failure, and then also being jeered at by the other wife. So she's getting it from both sides. Notice verse 8. Then Elkanah, her husband, said to her, Hannah, why do you weep? Why do you not eat? And why is your heart grieved? Am I not better to you than than 10 sons. Now, in his way, he's trying to encourage her. He's trying to encourage her, but it really is to no avail, because here you have the husband that's trying to, you know, in this ear, she's hearing this encouragement. And over here in this other ear, she's hearing Peninnah, and she's just jeering at her. So she's being tossed back and forth between one sense here, the husband, he's trying as desperately to be encouraging to her, but you got this other person yakking in your ear as well. It's got to be frustrating. Notice verse 9. So Hannah arose after they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh. Now Eli the priest was sitting on a seat by the doorpost of the tabernacle of the Lord. And she was in bitterness of soul and prayed to the Lord and wept in anguish. Now you get a sense again that this is a deeply moving prayer where it's not just, you know, going through all the basics. She's in anguish. She's in pain. Then, verse 11, she made a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your maidservant and remember me and not forget your maidservant, but will give your maidservant a male child, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall come upon his head. And it happened, as she continued praying before the Lord, that Eli watched her mouth. Now Hannah spoke in her heart, only her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. Therefore Eli thought she was drunk. Now, he couldn't hear her, saw the lips moving, so he obviously goes right away to the, well, she must be drunk. She must be just mouthing something, and she must have had too much to drink. Verse 15, or verse 14. So Eli said to her, how long will you be drunk? Put your wine away from you. Verse 15. But Hannah answered and said, no, my Lord, I am a woman of sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor intoxicating drink, but have poured out my soul before the Lord. So she can't have children. Her husband tries to encourage her. The other wife jeers her and ridicules her. The high priest overhears the prayer. He thinks she's drunk. She is in a situation where she just simply cannot win. She's getting it from every side. Here she is going again in Shiloh, and she's offering up this prayer, and even the high priest is sitting there going, you're drunk. Get out of here. Remove yourself from this wine and this alcohol. Now, Hannah does not give the details again to Eli, but simply states that I've poured out my soul in prayer to God, is the statement that she's made. But Eli perceives that she's asked this petition of God and that she wasn't drunk, and so he states for her to simply go in peace. Let's pick the story up in verse 19. Verse 19. Then they rose early in the morning and worshiped before the Lord and returned and came to their house at Ramah. And Elkanah knew Hannah, his wife, and the Lord remembered her. Very important statement. The Lord remembered her. So it came to pass in the process of time that Hannah conceived and bore a son and called his name Samuel, saying, because I have asked for him from the Lord. Verse 21. Now the man Elkanah and all his house went up to offer to the Lord the yearly sacrifice and his vow. But Hannah did not go, for she said to her husband, not until the child is weaned, then I will take him up, or I will take him that he may appear before the Lord and remain there forever. Now, I want you to think about this for a moment. We find that she is pregnant. We find that she gives birth. Samuel is born, and she does not forget the vow she made. Because remember what she said, if you will give me a son, she said a male child, I will turn him back over to you to be your servant, to serve your people. Samuel's name, the name itself, is a reminder of that vow. It means heard of God. It was a constant reminder to Hannah and to Samuel, who gave him life, that God himself had been involved in this process. Now, think about what's going through her mind. She had wanted that child for how long? Her husband had tried to encourage her. Peninnah was jeering at her. She had to deal with the culture of the day of everybody looking at her probably in a downward fashion because something wrong with her because she can't get pregnant. She finally gets a child, and think of that. She's going to give him up. She's going to give him to God. Let's pick it up in verse 26. This is again after the time that he had been weaned. She comes then back up to Shiloh and coming before Eli and brought him up before Eli. Verse 26, and she said, O my Lord, as your soul lives, my Lord, I am the woman who stood by you here praying to the Lord. For this child I prayed, and the Lord has granted me my petition, which I asked of him. Therefore, I also have lent him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he shall be lent to the Lord. So they worshiped the Lord there. The statement was made when he was born, I'm going to wait here until he's weaned, and then I'm going to take him up, and then I'm going to deliver him to God for his service. Again, God had given her the son she wanted, and in faith she believed God, and she returned him to God for his service. Now, again, the rest of the story there is that every year after she brought Samuel up, and again, the point here, they take a look a little bit in commentaries, that to be weaned, he was probably somewhere in the neighborhood of about 2 or 3. So she had only had him for a period of a couple of years, 2-3 years, tops. And now she would only see him once a year. But every year when she would come back up to Shiloh, she would deliver this new robe, just like the one that the high priest Eli wore. And again, it was a constant reminder, again, of the importance of what she had said when she said, I'm going to give this child. Give me this child. Allow me to have this child, and I'll give this child back to you. What's interesting about that whole situation, that she is not able to have children for so long, and finally, when she was able to have Samuel, we find that the rest of the story is that she was blessed to have more children. She actually had 3 sons and 2 daughters, again, in the family. So she was not without children, even though she had said, if I can have this male child to God, I will give him to you for service to your people, for the care of your people. There are lessons that we learn from Hannah. And I think, again, those are important when we look at it from the standpoint of not just the story itself, but what can we glean for it for us in terms of what we can learn from her life and what she did and what she did not do in certain respects. She could have lashed out. She went through a very difficult time. She went through a time probably of some depression, not being able to have what she wanted, being castigated by people of your own household. I mean, that's difficult. It's one thing when it's coming outside of your house, right? We talk about the standpoint of being persecuted by people in the world. But here was a situation in which the persecution was coming from inside the household. It was coming from the other wife, from Peninnah. So what are these lessons that we can learn from the life of Hannah? What are these lessons? Let's take a look at these. Lesson number one. She had great respect for God. She had great respect for God. Nowhere do we find here in 1 Samuel chapter 1, in all that we just read, did she ever come before God and demand and say, hey, you need to listen to me. Hey, you're not hearing me. Hey, I've wanted a child for how long now? What do I need to do? We don't find her ever demanding. We also find and we realize that she acknowledged the fact that God had the power. We see that again back in her prayer that she made at Shiloh, that God had the power, and if he granted her a son, she was willing to give him back to God. That is extremely important. She had, in a sense, made that vow. She had made that vow to God, and she was willing to follow through on it, and in fact, she did exactly that. She did follow through on what she had promised to God. In other words, it wasn't a situation of making a rash vow and saying, if you do this for me, I'll do this for you. And then you get that child and you've got that newborn baby and you've had it for a few years and thought, well, you know, maybe I can go back to God and make another deal. How about you give me another child and I give that one up? I want to keep this one. We don't see that. We see that she had a deep respect for God. She didn't demand of God, and she did exactly what she said she was willing to do. Second lesson we find from the life of Hannah is that she had faith in God's power. She had faith in God's power. You know, it's interesting if you notice what she did after she prayed and she had the interaction with Eli. After she would again make that particular prayer before Eli, let's drop down to 1 Samuel chapter 1 and notice verse 17. Eli answered, this is again when she's had this prayer, he said, go in peace, and the God of Israel grant your petition, which you have asked of him. And she said, let your maidservant find favor in your sight. So the woman went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad. Now, remember, before that, we had witnessed and understood that there was a sadness that existed. But she had faith in the power of God. So when she went before God and she made this vow, she didn't say, well, I wonder if it's going to happen. I wonder if it's going to occur. Eli makes a statement, God of Israel, grant your petition which you have asked of him. And she went her way, she ate, and the sadness, the sad countenance, it was all gone. She had done her part by praying about the situation and putting it in God's hands, but secondarily, she was no longer sad. In other words, you can say, I'll put it on God's in God's hands, but I'm still going to remain sad because I don't have the child. We don't see that. We see that she did exactly that. She took it and she put it in God's hands and said, it's now up to you. I have faith in your power that you will take care of this. So we find here a lesson that she had faith in God's power. The point being for us is that we understand and realize that we can say in a particular situation, I'm going to leave this in God's hands. But how many times do we kind of keep one hand on it and sort of, you know, wrestle with it and decide we're going to still maintain it or a part of it? This is a situation where solely it had to be in God's hands. And she was willing to do that. She had faith in the power of God. It wasn't a sort of partial faith. It was, I'm giving it all to you, and I know that you can make this happen. The lesson for us is, again, having that faith in God's power. Not sort of, well, yeah, but I still want to keep my finger on the pulse of it, and you know, maybe there's something I still can do. She gave it all to God. Third lesson we find is that she approached God in deep humility. As we said before, she was not demanding. You go back to the prayer that she made, and she made the statement. In verse 11, notice what it says. It says here, then she made a vow and said of the Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your maid servant and remember me. This term, if you will look on your maid servant, she thought of herself as a maid servant of God. She saw herself as being, again, enslaved to God in a right sense, in a proper sense, not the way we think of slavery from man's history. She was looking at herself as a maidservant of God. She did not think of keeping the child, but rather giving him back to God in service to God and his people. So again, it takes a tremendous amount of deep humility to go before God and say, this is what I'm prepared to do. The child that I've wanted for so long, I'm willing to give up so that you can have that child, and for the benefit of your people, he can serve your people. Again, this is a very humbling thought process that we're looking at. And we again look at this from the standpoint of approaching God in a deep humility. Do we have that same attitude? Can we understand that same lesson when we come before God in our prayer before God, in how we interact with God? Is it out of a deep, humbling attitude? As we heard this morning from Mr. Taylor, who is God going to work with? Those who are of a poor and a contrite spirit, a meek spirit, a humble spirit. Those are the individuals that God is going to work with. God worked with Hannah because why? In part, she did have this deep humility. She had a deep, deep humility. What's the fourth lesson we learn from Hannah? The fourth lesson we learn from Hannah is that she rejoiced greatly in spirit and in truth. Now, what do I mean by that? Here in 1 Samuel chapter 1, we find again the story of Hannah. We're introduced to her, we've introduced to the family, we're introduced to the problem that she had. She's not able to get pregnant, she's not able to have children. She's going through all of this angst and anxiety, dealing with the other wife, trying to be encouraged by her husband, going constantly year after year up to the worship in Shiloh, and still no child. The husband's encouraging. He's giving her a double portion in terms of the sacrifice and the worship that's being given, but still no child. And finally coming to the point where, again, she just simply makes this vow before God. What follows after chapter 1 here of Samuel is 1 Samuel chapter 2, which is often referred to as Hannah's prayer to God. And it's an incredible prayer. It's a prayer that is filled with elements of prophecy, and it is filled with elements of encouragement. It is a prayer that has been recorded for all of us to see. And the elements of her prayer are something that are not just from the standpoint of a woman who wanted a child, got a child, and then gave that child back to God. Because the elements of her prayer are something for all of us to look at and say, wow. She rejoiced in spirit and truth, Can I do the same thing? Am I doing the same thing? This lesson that we learn from her is witnessed in this prayer. Let's take a look at it beginning in 1 Samuel chapter 2 and verse 1. As I said, this is a prayer that is filled with spirit and truth. Just as David recites his prayers filled with spirit and truth that we find in the Psalms, so too Hannah has a prayer recorded for our benefit. Think about that for a moment. We often talk about the prayers of David, do we not? Psalm 51, this prayer, again, the prayer of repentance and a psalm of repentance coming before God. We find David, again, making all of these prayers that we find recited. And yet here we find memorialized for us in the book of Samuel, this prayer of Hannah for our benefit. 1 Samuel chapter 2, beginning here in verse 1. It says, "And Hannah prayed and said, My heart rejoices in the Lord. My horn is exalted in the Lord. I smile at my enemies because I rejoice in your salvation." There's a statement that's made there at the very beginning. My heart rejoices in the Lord. Does that sound familiar to you at all? Well, it should, because David said the same thing in Psalm chapter 9 and Psalm chapter 13. That would be years later, right? But here's Hannah, who is on the same wavelength, again, in terms of her prayer that David was praying in Psalm chapter 9 and Psalm chapter 13. Notice verse 2. "No one is holy like the Lord, for there is none beside you, nor is there any rock like our God. Talk no more so very proudly. Let no arrogance come from your mouth, for the Lord is the God of knowledge. And by him actions are weighed. The bows of the mighty men are broken, and those who stumbled are girded with strength. Those who were full have hired themselves out for bread, and the hungry have ceased to hunger. Even the barren has borne seven, and she has become many children, and she who has many children has become feeble. Verse 6, "The Lord kills and makes alive. He brings down to the grave and he brings up." Verse 6 is interesting here because it seems to indicate that she had a belief in the resurrection. He brings down to the grave and he brings up. That's a statement regarding resurrection. So she rejoiced in a truth, correct? We find here a prayer that is, she had to have been inspired, I believe, she had to be inspired by the Holy Spirit to offer up this prayer, much the same way that David was inspired in many of the prayers, all of the prayers that he wrote. Verse 7, "The Lord makes poor and makes rich. He brings low and he lifts up. He raises the poor from the dust and lifts the beggar from the ash heap to set them among princes and make them inherit the throne of glory. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he has set the world upon them." Now, again, look at the imagery that she's using here after everything she's been through. She's exalting God as greatly, I think, as anybody in a prayer that we have ever seen. These words that we're finding here in verse 8 are prophetic and they are encouraging. It's interesting. Let's go back to verse 8 and let's read that again just for a moment. It says, "He raises the poor from the dust and lifts the beggar from the ash heap to set them among princes and make them inherit the throne of glory. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he has set the world upon them. He will guard the feet of his saints, but the wicked shall be silent in darkness, for by strength no man shall prevail." Now, the words are prophetic, but there's something here to note. What is that? If you look at Psalm chapter 113, verses 7 through 9, it essentially paraphrases part of Hannah's prayer, what we see here. The statement, "He raises the poor out of the dust and lifts the needy out of the ash heap, that he may sit him with princes, with the princes of his people. He grants the barren women a home like a joyful mother of children." That's what Psalm 113 says. "He lifts the beggar from the ashes," I'm reading here from 1 Samuel chapter 2 now, "to set them princes, to make them inherit the throne of glory." Much of the, again, paraphrasing of, that we see here of this particular prayer appears in Psalm chapter 113. It's interesting when you look at it from that particular context. But there's also, again, something else. Again, based upon what we just read here in verse 8. We find that Mary, the mother of Jesus, makes a statement in Luke chapter 1 and verse 52. I'll read it to you. Luke chapter 1 and verse 52, it says, she says the following, "He has put down the mighty from their thrones and exalted the lowly." He has put down the mighty from their thrones and exalted the lowly. Let's go back to the first part of verse 8. He raises the poor from the dust, exalts the lowly, and lifts the beggar from the ash heap to set them among princes and make them inherit the throne of glory. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he has set the world upon them. So I want you to think about that for a moment. What we read in Psalm chapter 113, verses 7 through 9, which is paraphrased of what we read here in verse 8, and what Mary, the mother of Jesus, is saying in Luke chapter 1 and verse 52, he has put down the mighty from their thrones and exalted the lowly. We're finding that Hannah is clearly on the same wavelength as David and Mary, the mother of Jesus. And we know that all three of them had one common component. They worshiped in spirit and truth. They rejoiced greatly in spirit and truth. Let's look here at verse 9, finishing out Hannah's prayer, beginning in verse 9. He will guard the feet of his saints, but the wicked shall be silent in darkness. For by strength no man shall prevail. The adversaries of the Lord shall be broken in pieces. From heaven he will thunder against them. The Lord will judge the ends of the earth. He will give strength to his king and exalt the horn of his anointed. What in the world is she talking about? It's prophetic right there. Because here in verses 9 and 10, she is speaking about the prophesied return of Jesus Christ. Notice it again in verse 10. The adversaries of the Lord shall be broken to pieces. From heaven he will thunder against them. The Lord will judge the ends of the earth. Who is that? That's Jesus Christ. He will give strength to his king and exalt the horn of his anointed. Who was anointed the Messiah? Jesus Christ. This prayer, again, think of all of this. After that son was born, think about what's going on here. Her mindset is, again, yes, you granted me the son. And in deep appreciation, she's acknowledging God and acknowledging God's plan, and she's giving this prayer of tremendous prophecy, encouragement for all of us. Let's notice Psalm chapter 96. Psalm chapter 96. Psalm chapter 96 and verse 13, he says, "For he is coming." Who is the he? It is Jesus Christ. He is coming, for he is coming to judge the earth. He shall judge the world with righteousness and the peoples with his truth. That is what Hannah was speaking about in 1 Samuel chapter 2 and verse 10. This individual, Hannah, was an individual, brethren, that probably never dreamed that the son that she sought would ultimately be used by God. Now, she had wanted a son, and she understood and she realized that when she made that vow to God, that he would have to go back to God. But did she really comprehend for a moment just how Samuel would be used? Because he was used as a prophet, he was used as a judge, he was used as a leader of Israel. What she did know was that this child that she so deeply wanted was a gift from God. And so as such, she knew and she understood that she had faith in the power of God, and she sought God through deep humility and respect. I believe that the life of Hannah, even as short as we find it there in 1 Samuel chapter 1 and the prayer that she offered up in 1 Samuel chapter 2, has tremendous lessons again for us. Lessons that regardless of where we are at in our life are something that we can look to and look to that example and say, that is the life. Those are the attributes that I want to emulate. Let us look at her life, and let us look at those lessons that we can learn from the life of Hannah.